Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Doing a classic, iconic, huge issue in every comic reader's history, I believe, with G.I. Joe 21, the wordless issue. But before we do, Ed, what's new?
Patreon.com/Ed Piskor is where I'm serializing the Red Room comic strip at this very moment. Issue 1 is up there, available to read completely, and serializing issue 2 so far. $3 will get you the complete archive. I put new strips up there every Tuesday. But once again, it's for the early adopter who wants to support the project and read it ahead of everybody else because it'll come out in print in 2021. I also want to promote the Ed Piskor Studio Edition because the Kayfabe channel did its job, sold out of all the X-Men Grand Design omnibuses. You might find some on Amazon here or there, a couple stores, but they can't reorder till after the holidays. So I figure, why not try to sell these out before the holidays too? Fantagraphics.com, they have a steep discount for the holidays, so that you can get it ahead of time. And once these are out of print, they're out of print forever.
And if you want to be a hit at Christmas, get your person one of these.
Heck yeah, man. Especially if your loved one calculates the quality of a gift by a metric ton.
I am mentioning Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive, and The Plain Janes. These are my last two big books to come out. Came out right before everything kind of shut down with COVID and no convention, so I wasn't able to promote these all year. Street Angel is the Image collection of all the Image comics that I did in full color, as well as a few books that weren't printed or collected anywhere. So 240 pages for $20. The Homeless Ninja on a Skateboard, perfect for any reader. And The Plain Janes is my suburban tale of high school outcasts who start making art around their town to basically liven up their lives. And of course, this creates all kinds of problems with everybody from their classmates to the local police. So Plain Janes and Street Angels in stores wherever you buy books and comics. But here is the reason for the video, Ed. G.I. Joe 21. This is every cartoonist I know, this is a really important issue. And this is Larry Hama doing a comic that had no words in it besides your title. It was a quote-unquote silent issue about Snake Eyes breaking in to rescue Scarlet from Cobra headquarters. And this is, what an issue. Like, where do you begin? This is one of those I don't think I can say enough about. It's legendary.
Yeah, here's one. I think that's super noteworthy that Larry Hama is providing breakdowns for this thing. So
story and breakdowns, Larry Hama.
So he's fully pacing out the story. You know, this is not Marvel method. This is not an artist interpreting, you know, a couple sentences of story. So he's pacing this thing out because it's such a kind of revolutionary idea for Marvel Comics. And maybe he just doesn't even want to write a whole long ass script. So he's going to break it down in panels, structure it, make sure that it reads properly, and then give it to Steve L to finish.
It's a full moon. Every comic book is.
Let me ask you this, Jimmy. Just like as a designer, as an artist, how do you feel about the plane? Like, should it be breaking the moon? Should it be over more? Because like when I see this, I feel like I've made mistakes doing the complete circle moon and composing stuff that way. I think that it's a better design to break the circle.
You know, if you break the circle, you create, I think, depth. The moon becomes like a further back element. This doesn't bother me much. It's small. So, you know, I mean, that could also be a bigger distraction if that were full-size panel or something. It's not terrible. From a military standpoint, I'm more concerned about that. Man, you're paratrooping on a full moon night. You're exposed.
Yeah.
and we're going to see Snake Eyes jumping out of this airplane. I love this, man. What a page with the purple backgrounds and that magenta interior and him jumping out. He looks like an action figure falling. Love the gravity of the gun, you know, falling behind him slightly. Really great.
Getting closer to the camera in the second to last panel, but then bypassing the camera as it descends.
Yeah, you see the top of him, like you're underneath him, he's coming at you, and now he's past the camera and the camera's following him into the Cobra headquarters.
Using old color technology, I'm impressed with the kind of propeller color with that blue. I think it's a very smart choice.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm going to look up the colorist here while we're here. And it's George Russo, who you've talked about.
Classic. I mean, he colored a lot of the Silver Age stuff. One other noteworthy thing, when I was last in New York Comic Con, sat with Janice Chang, visited me, the famed letterer. And she said, you know, she did the title lettering, got paid for the whole issue.
Nice. That's awesome. She owed Larry for that one. That's good stuff.
She said, she's like, man, Larry's my brother.
So this is Scarlet, the prisoner that Snake Eyes is coming to free in Storm Shadow. And Scarlet's sort of running from the opposite direction. How does she get free? It's a very resourceful character on that front. So we're going to have two storylines going on kind of simultaneously through this. And Despero watching, you know, some intruder is coming in, but the probability is very low.
I like that he's like Dark Helmet from Spaceballs too, and has like little chess pieces. Yes. With all the guys. Like, these are singular, unique things, man. Like, those must be a cost of fortune. Could probably buy a lot of bullets with that, man. I think that's kind of frivolous. That's probably like their downfall, their frivolity.
So you see Snake Eyes landing on the previous page. Now you see Scarlet picking her way out of these locks.
There are some cartoonists out there, man, who specialize, or, you know, they're known for their silent comics. And I was sitting with a bunch of these cats, man. There were two of these dudes. And this comic came up. I bet that comic comes up for all their conversations. But, like, both perplexed by the Destro, like, staring at the Baroness. Because they're like, yeah, it has so much meat and such a good story. But, like, when he's looking at that Baroness, I just don't get it, man.
That's subtext, right?
Yeah, that's his love, man.
Here's the question, though. Who's what? Right. All those gimmick chess sets, like when I was a kid, it'd be like Civil War chess set and stuff, but they're impossible. Like, those are not for a purist chess player to use.
Yeah, not at all. Also, at this time, there were, if you remember, like, you get the action figure, there's a little booklet.
This is an action figure ad, by the way. Like actual size, I think.
Right, but these things here, the like small, they were hustling these PVC size 3-inchers, man. So
that's hilarious. Like, yeah. You think they get that as like part of the hey Larry, we're selling these, man, work this stuff in.
One of the big challenges he had with this comic was killing Zartan in one issue, and then he has an orange mohawk a couple issues later in his back. Like, how the heck do we,
because you gotta imagine that Hasbro's feeding them, like, oh, these are the new toy vehicles, you know, get these designs in whenever they're, you know, like, they had to be feeding that kind of info.
Larry Hama writes the back cards, so he's getting all that stuff well in advance himself.
G.I. Joe is a really underappreciated comic for all of these reasons. Like, what he spins out of those ingredients.
I love it, man.
How about this for pretty great? And then they even throw a little color flourish in whenever she yanks Storm Shadow down through that portal where she was trapped. Pretty good. Very easy to read. 6-panel grid, classic. Mixes up the page layouts really well, too. Like, it keeps it moving. The pages are interesting. If you switch scenes, it's pretty clear visually somehow.
Yeah. I love the very naturalistic inking, the kind of thick line. There are these, like, I'm not the biggest Steve Lealoha fan, but this is probably one of my favorite works. But, like, just the kind of grittiness. It feels Toth-ish, but it feels like Johnny Quest-ish. Like, there's something to it that doesn't scream, you know, Marvel job guy.
I agree, and I was thinking of it in terms of the figures. Like, these are not roided out figures.
Right.
They have a real sense of, they feel like the action figures in terms of proportions, but it reads great. It feels like people, you know, soldiers running around doing this stuff. Not that they resemble soldiers exactly, but that anatomy is, I appreciate that. Storm Shadow brings in some of his ninja allies to get going. This is fun. This is a piece of ninja. This is the kind of ninja skills you don't see used, but Snake Eyes posing as a fallen soldier.
Yeah.
Whenever the soldier without his clothes, you know, hanging over, we get the reveal of where that uniform comes from, so it all fits. Really great. Like, in addition to being able to read, it's logical and easy to follow. Not an easy thing to do.
This is the establishment, and so much later, the Ashikage school ninja gang signs become such a part of the comic, man, where there'll be like whole pages of just the characters like doing different shapes.
It's ridiculous. So as Snake Eyes is breaking in, Scarlet's making her way out, finding this jetpack. Again, easy to follow, even though it's cross-cutting between different characters going through this. Snake Eyes reverse engineering, like, he's coming up on where she would have been, but it's empty, so where is she? And then get some ninja fights going on.
Ninja descent. Larry Hama is also a guy who's credited by all those dudes for hipping, like, everybody to Lone Wolf and Cub comics. Like, he went to the kind of, like, local book-off type bookstores that were there that specialized in Japanese books in New York brought a bunch of those early Lone Wolf and Cubs back to Continuity Studios and said that, like, those comics disappeared
the first time Frank Miller came through.
Exactly.
Great reflection of the ninjas in his mask visor. This is a really good ninja comic.
It is.
You know, like, this is the height of, like, ninja, you know, ninjas coming to American pop culture. I have Ninja Comics, Ninja Elite, Ninja Funnies. You know, like, it's so big in comics, and this is as good as any of them.
Yeah, and it's the time period as well, like that mid-80s when that stuff starts coming to our shores and starts playing Grindhouse. Like, couldn't escape that shit. American Ninja.
Great head stomp. I think that's a wrestling move. And then, whoa, Scarlet's made her way out. Snake Eyes has made his way out. Here we go. Is this going to work? Big dramatic showdown. Is Storm Shadow going to let his prey escape? And perfect team up. Snake Eyes clapping his hands around and catching that sword inches from her face.
The Storm Shadow character, it was probably my generation's introduction to the gray area character. There were good guys, there were bad guys, but Storm Shadow on any given day, depending on where the wind is blowing, could be a good guy or a bad guy.
This is such a great sequence. As a comics reader, I was really into this. And, you know, we talk about the no words and it's very readable, but you see the setup, the aftermath. It's perfect. Yes. You know, there's no question at all and it looks good. But Marvel, it was like, I had artists that told me, you need to be able to read the story without words.
Sure.
So this was like, everybody that knew that and was trying to make comics, this had to be your Bible, where it was like, wow, he did it. He did the story with no words.
Can you just go back real quick one time? The, like, this sequence here, too, that's Kurtzman-like, you know? I still think of this as, you know, a war book or whatever, and to me, that's like Kurtzman storytelling. You could find that same syncopation in any of his Frontline Combats or Two-Fisted Tales.
Yeah, and a great spin on it. You know, you start the story out with Snake Eyes going in to rescue Scarlet, and in the end, Scarlet saves Snake Eyes.
Right.
Pretty fun.
Yeah, and it's the arc, you know? Like, all the characters that were sort of the A-listers of this issue, we get to see, you know, how they all end up.
So, I brought G.I. Joe 24. And we could look at this on its own as the Russ Heath issue, which is stunning.
Yeah, but it's don't show too much.
Yeah, it's a reverse story, by the way. This is the G.I. Joes have captured the Cobra Commander, and now it's Storm Shadow who's tasked with rescuing him. And I will save this for another day because this is kind of an amazing issue on its own. Russ Heath certainly adds to it. But the reason that I brought this is to show off the letters column. And I'll try to get a shot there that people at home can kind of zoom in on these. And the reaction is so strong. People either love this issue, which several of the letters do talk about how this is great and they've never read anything like it. But then there are others that are like, this stinks. I read it too quickly. It only took me 5 minutes. What happened? Sorry if I seem harsh. I know you'll do better next issue. And this person says they've never written a comic before except just because this one was just no good. Don't do this again. And several of them kind of do that. Did your letter go on vacation? Still, it was great anyway. That's the same letter, like this guy complaining, but ends with still it was great anyway.
Oh, man, that's Twitter before Twitter.
Yeah, totally. So kind of neat, like whenever these letter columns used to exist and every once in a while something would happen that really would get everybody's goat, it'd be awesome.
They're like, it's so funny because I've experienced similar feelings as these guys in a certain way. Like when revolutionary stuff happens, it's like sometimes you got to catch up. And I was in that position. Like when they started binding books and putting spines on them and stuff, I remember thinking like, this comic is 4 panels a page. Like it's a 22 page comic that they broke up into 120 pages just so that they could put a spine on it and charge me $20. Now here's the difference. Spending $20 is way different than spending like 60 cents or whatever an issue of this would be. But these writers, like, I guess at the time I equated my reading experience with like panel count or something, and this guy's like, I want to sit down, I want to read a comic.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anybody's reasonings for any of this stuff, but man, it's fun to read this stuff. You know, other big ones, of course, is the Mike Mignola X-Force fill-in that got some letters.
Yes.
And then also later in that X-Force, when Mike Allred and Peter Milligan take over and change everything about that book, wow, those letter columns never stop complaining, like, through the rest of that series run.
I would be curious about the letters column for three issues after the Walt Simonson splash page, Thor. And, like, I don't have that comic. I'd be curious to know what the readers thought about that one.
Yeah, worth looking up. So the other piece in this video is G.I. Joe Yearbook number 3. And the reason is it's a direct sequel to this story. And you see the same players on the cover. This time, Ron Wagner is tasked as penciler, so I don't know whether Larry Hama did layouts and gave to him or not. I don't know what his process was exactly, but we'll kind of go through this and see what you think. First thing is Cobra has this like pyramid in the middle of New York City.
I'm a fan of Wagner's work on G.I. Joe. Like, they would get these very kind of baseline kind of artists. So it would be like him, M.D. Bright, Rod Wiggum. I liked all of their works, man.
Yeah, and Snake Eyes here, you see him being being brought in, captured. And the G.I. Joes get a picture of this. And off they go. They're surveillance jets. I love that it's like, by the way, you can buy this toy at home.
Oh, dude, like on that previous issue, like with the jetpack, it's like that they innovated the $5 vehicle, you know what I mean? So you could get like the $20 one, you could get a $50 thing, but here's like a little $5 vehicle that you could get.
All right, so Scarlet goes out and visits. Who does she visit? Who is this unmasked man that showing pictures of Snake Eyes to? And then cut to the Cobra Center, and Mindbender has, this is perfect. The character is Dr. Mindbender, has Snake Eyes hooked up to some kind of probing device, and we're seeing, I guess they cheat with a couple of words there, but we're seeing inside of his brain.
Yeah, and that device is key. That's from Dr. Venom's technology, man, from those first dozen issues, and they put Snake Eyes in that before.
A subway piece of this character getting on the subway. Great New York. I love this kind of stuff. Like an 80s New York subway scene looking pretty grimy and stuff. I am convinced that Todd McFarlane's hand is on this page. This character's face, hair, expression, all of it is just 100% Todd McFarlane-esque. So I don't know if he was pitching in maybe with some inking. I think Kim DeMalder is your primary inker here. Max Scheel on the coloring. Another colorist that we've pointed out a lot in these 80s Marvel comics.
Christy Scheel.
But this is McFarlane to me through and through. And I don't know what he's doing, if he's doing a little penciling to help out or what. But am I right? Like,
I think so. And he, you know, he did two issues. Like there was one printed issue of G.I. Joe. And this is the yearbook. So it's going to talk about the issues.
And he's kicking around. This is like 87 or so. So like he's got a couple years in comics.
I'm saying if this was printed around issue 60 time, then there's probably no question, man. Cause like, yeah, the more you say it,
I see it. And it just really feels like a McFarlane, a lot of McFarlane on this page.
And Kim DeMalder inked some McFarlane Hulks too, so they were a tandem of sorts.
So the guy who got on the subway, he looks kind of familiar when he emerges and jumps off.
He masks up on the subway.
Storm Shadow. He cuts off. These guys like halfway harass him, although he hits him with his cane on his way in, so he's starting this little fracas, he cuts off their mohawk and afro and ponytail.
I don't think this artwork is exactly Ron Wagner either, by the way, man.
Like, yeah, there are
I know his stuff
pages.
Really well, and he never really lit stuff that way, so I think
a few hands on this.
Remember, you ever see when they would have credits where the inker would be like D Hands or something like that?
Yeah. All right. Also, working at the same time, we have Storm Shadow invading from kind of the sewer or from underneath, and then we have another character working her way through the lobby of the Cobra headquarters. This is fun. Storm Shadow coming through the sewer. There are dead people in G.I. Joe, by the way. This kid's comic.
Oh yeah, these characters die. Dr. Mindbender will die in a couple of issues.
The Dr. Mindbender, this face looks like it's inked by somebody else or penciled or something by somebody else. It looks different than a lot of the other art in this comic.
Yeah. Feels continuity studios. And this feels like it's a complete different set. We've never seen those textures.
This is fun. Baroness uncovers this what appears to be just a custodian, but turns out to be Scarlet in disguise because she has guns and stuff underneath. But she also has, I guess, Storm Shadow's wolf.
Yeah, man, Timber.
Hidden in her cleaning canister there. I love this page. This is really a fun.
This is, you know what, this is reminding me that those dudes like DeMalder and Wagner, I'm pretty sure, like DeMolder definitely was a Kubert school student, and I'm pretty sure Wagner was. And these organic lines feel like post-QB.
And the way this stuff would work is guys had studios that they shared with other people. So if you did get in a pinch, maybe your buddy pitches in and inks a little bit, inks a background here or there. It's very, not uncommon for that kind of thing to happen.
Very New York-centric business. The McFarland thing is the weird thing, because like, it's like you got to FedEx this to
maybe
Calgary.
Or he's in town for a convention or pitching to Marvel or DC for, you know, more work, new books, something like that.
Right.
So it's conceivable he's in town and crashing on somebody's couch also.
Yeah.
Storm Shadow fighting his way through what were the ninjas' allies in G.I. Joe 21.
The thing,
burning them alive, then? Is that what we're seeing here?
You could tell that this is like after the Frank Miller Daredevils are out with the kind of pacing on that page.
This is fun. So he cuts like this fuel line, and then he throws a star onto the ground to spark it. Yeah.
And look, man, little iconographic asterisk sparks.
Good stuff there. Still not getting what he's looking for out of Snake Eyes' mind. You know, this not Snake Eyes' first time through this kind of thing, probably.
That's it, man.
Blows up his system somehow. Like
that's like
feedback.
That's like our dad's fear of ever touching the computer. Like, I think that'll happen.
I think you're right. So Snake Eyes is getting the shit stomped out of him here, man. He's taking headshots and stuff. He's down, and guys are just putting the boots to him. And that's whenever Storm Shadow comes through. And what's Storm Shadow's move? Throw that sword over. Snake Eyes catches it. It's a whole different fight.
Cool design stuff here with this kind of thing.
Yeah, the headquarters is good. This is almost Star Wars, you know, fighting on that narrow bridge over some kind of lava pit or something. Ninjas on both sides. Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow back to back. This is 9-year-old's wet dream right here. It's perfect, man. You could play this out with your action figures.
I had a subscription to this when I was a kid, man, for years and years. Probably 4 years, 5 years.
And they're fighting their way through this building, you know, trying to ultimately get everybody out. And whenever they get near the exit, they come face to face with all of the Cobra troops are waiting for them, guns drawn, ready to go. Baroness comes in from behind, guns to the head, and walks them out these doors, which I think are front doors. So it's kind of peculiar that it's like, yeah, I'm going to take them this way. I'm going to take them to the streets. But it kind of works. And we see that this is actually Scarlet in disguise. We never saw the results of that fight when Baroness got the drop on her, but apparently that dog helped out quite a bit. Tilted the scale in her favor, and off they go. And you get a little seedy shot there of Baroness naked. In her undies.
It does feel like exploitative, like paperback cover.
Mm-hmm.
And the bondage stuff that was done in the 50s.
Yeah, Eric Stanton pitching in for a panel.
Yeah.
And that's it. All the rest of this is your yearbook stuff. Some of it's fun. You know, promoting the cartoon, of course. A lot of pinups. Cover recaps.
Yeah, I'm trying to see, because this would be like the more late... So
how badass is that for a cover, man? Flat yellow with Snake Eyes,
Mike
Zeck,
man. This is the Mike Zeck era, and he was a fucking badass on the shit. These John Byrne covers ain't nothing to slouch at neither, man. But like these Mike Zeck covers, I was living for them shits.
And then this is pretty neat for a yearbook. This is your recap of what has happened in that last year.
Exactly.
Pretty awesome.
And by the way, it's all before the McFarlane. Oh yeah, dude. When
Sergeant Slaughter
shows up
in 1986.
Huge. That shit was huge for me, man. I was freaking in kindergarten, dude.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Dreadnoughts. It's pretty cool. Like the way these characters would be introduced is amazing for like G.I. Joe history. You know, one of these letter columns, we're excited to see Duke making his debut coming up.
Yeah, that happens real early. And then like in this stuff, like that one with Flint on the cover, that's his first appearance.
This is like 3 years later, I should say, too, from this. So, you know, a lot of time has passed there, but pretty remarkable. You know, what Hama accomplishes, again, building a universe. I think it's comparable to something like Claremont on X-Men because, I mean, it's 10 years of this.
Yeah.
It's a huge cast that he's weaving in and out. And then this is a Mike Zeck art on this little backup story, which, I'm not going to lie, disappoints me compared to the covers because his cover work is extremely strong this time. All these characters, though, this is the kind of stuff I'd be copying as a little kid.
For sure, man. Like, that's a good Zeck piece.
Yeah.
Right there, man. I'm a huge fan of this comic. Like, I have every issue except the last one. So, kayfabers, if you have like a reader copy, if you have two copies, PO Box 3071, Montreal, PA 15120, be happy to take that off your hands. What do you say, Jimmy? Bounce?
Yeah, that's all I have, but pretty classic stuff here, and I feel like this one's a little unknown. So if you love G.I. Joe 21, track down your book 3.
It deserves its own vid on Cartoonist Kayfabe. That's for freaking sure, man. Let's bounce, dude. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when the next vids are available. Street Angel Image Collection is in stores now. Plain Jane's is in stores. Octobriana in stores. Patreon.com/EdPiscor. $3 for the Red Room Archive and new strips every Tuesday. X-Men Grand Design Omnibus sold out, but in stores while supplies last. The EdPiscor Studio Edition. Fantagraphics.com for steep discounts on the remaining copies of that one.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. I encourage you to subscribe to keep up with everything we do. It's hard to catch it all on the social media feed, so give a subscription to that newsletter. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts also at the links below this video.
Read more G.I. Joe comics.